Are you the Tragically Hip's ultimate super fan? Or do you know someone who just might be? Well, I'm on the hunt for the biggest hip fan out there. The one who's been there for every tour, knows every lyric, and maybe even has a lyric tattooed somewhere they're not legally allowed to show on Instagram. This is your chance to give them the recognition they deserve. Or hey, maybe it's time to finally recognize yourself. Nominate someone, or yourself, by commenting on our official contest posts on social media. We're looking for passion, stories, and fans who go above and beyond because The Hip was never just a band. It was, and still is, a way of fucking life. The fans with the most nominees will move on to the next round. Yes, there is a second round. But first, we need your help by surfacing the super fans. So scroll, tag, and celebrate the people who've made hip fandom their personality trait in the best possible way. Dude, there's a sash, there are prizes, there are bragging rights forever. But most of all, there's a chance to be part of something bigger than yourself. So please, nominate someone today.
A member of the DATC media family.
Previously on the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown.
Vish from Creative Control, what were your initial thoughts about Escape Is at Hand for the Traveling Man?
It stands out from their catalog in so many ways, and I'm not sure how to explain it, but I was in a post-hardcore zone as a drummer myself at the time that this album came out. The drums, there was just this thing going on at that point in sort of post-rock and underground pop music where the drumming, it's really hard for me to articulate. I'm not smart enough as a musician, but there's just something about that kind of drumming.
Hey, it's JD here, and welcome back to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. It's my pleasure to be with you here every Monday as we spend some time sharing stories and experiences while counting down 40 essential tracks by the Tragically Hip that you chose with your very own top 20 ballots. I simply tabulated the results using an abacus and a back scratcher I whittled from a hunk of lucky wood I stole from a nomad. How many of your favorite songs fared in the rankings? Let me know at tthtop40@gmail.com. This week, I'm lucky to be joined by Andrew from sunny Tampa, Florida. Andrew from the FLA, how the fuck are you doing on this hip-tastic day?
Doing great, my friend. Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm mostly excellent. It's like 13 degrees here, Celsius, which is probably 60 for you, 65, which is significantly better than zero.
Right.
You see Canadians on patios on days like today.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they'll be like, I got to have a... Well, you know, because you were originally from the Buffalo, right?
North Buffalo. Shorts weather today.
When spring comes out, yeah, you throw on a hoodie and shorts. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let's get right into this. From Buffalo to Florida, you've seen a lot of Tragically Hip. Let's hear about your hipstery.
All right. It's hard to think of like the absolute beginning, because growing up on the shores of Lake Ontario, listening to the radio, there was always the Hip. The Hip was always kind of there in the background. Going through high school, there was always the songs here or there that you heard and you knew. My first real solid memory of it is going to shows. Good friend of mine and his older brother and his friends took us to a show, and it was year 2000, and went to three that year. It was amazing. It kind of just changed what I was doing. I was working for Island Records at the time in high school as a high school job doing promotions. It was really cool
You two was on Island, weren't they?
Don't think so. I think Cranberries were on there. Sum 41 was big. They were rolling up when I was doing promotions. And it was a really cool job, and I don't think they knew how old I was, because it was pre-internet, pre-video chatting days. I was employed online through New York City. The guy I talked to, I never saw him or met him, but I got to go to so many concerts. It was three or four a week, and it was all different bands, all different genres. If I wanted to go to a Limp Bizkit show, they'd buy me a ticket, and I'd go, and I'd do promotions for our bands. So I experienced a ton, but I kind of got burnt out on music in general. Just watching all these bands, they'd hit Cleveland, in Erie and then Buffalo and Syracuse, and they'd play the same set list and they'd have the same story and the same introduction. And going to see the Hip, it was just a change. Now they'd pre-share their set list with the light crew and stuff, but it wasn't the same night after night. And the improv was different. And it felt like a real show, feeling like seeing a small band on tour rather than a giant production, even when it was a giant production. Yeah. And that's kind of how I fell in love with them. It started there. And I remember hearing my song. I know it's a question for a minute, but Tiger the Lion. Just hearing that sounded so different. And I just fell in love with it. Yeah. And it's not high on my favorites list now or anything, but that song just popped out from what was happening at the time. And it kind of got really, really to dig in to the band and get some of the back catalog, and drove me to go to more and more shows.
That guitar work that Robbie does on the outro is mind melting. It's so good. It's like channeling David Gilmour.
Yeah. And not even that. It's when they played live, it was better. Yeah. So like, it was one of the rare instances you could go see a lot of bands or a lot of music and it was good and it was recognizable, but it wasn't as good as when they had it on the album. The Hip were the opposite. Like I would take a live Hip show over an album any day. They were just insane anytime you saw them live, and they put in that effort every show.
They really did. It's staggering to think that they were as hands-on and hardworking, you know, as they were a band in 1986 as they were in 2006, and 2016. Like, my God, 2016, I want to help you lift enormous things. Right. You know, like, Jesus Christ, they went on the road with a singer that was dying.
Yeah, and to be able...
How these guys work.
I've seen a couple sound checks, and they sent it at the sound check. Like, they...
No.
Seriously, and they played hard, empty arena or an empty thing, and they played hard just to, you know, move where the show was going to go.
Oh, that's so cool. How did you score that, getting to see soundchecks? Was that part of the gig from the other gig?
No, some of that was just having that. It was a weird time, that pre-internet, pre-scan security stuff. Like, I had that.
Yeah.
I had that pass thing on your Hip where it was like 10 or 12 backstage passes from different shows, and if you look like you belong places, sometimes you just belong places. Just being able to wander around and knowing when to get in early and knowing not to be fanboying at every person you see, just playing it cool, and you could wander yourself into some places.
Oh, that's great. I've never had the courage to do that.
Yeah, it's sometimes you get shut down and okay, cool, but you end up
That's the worst that's going to happen, right? They're not going tackle you and
right,
you know, extricate you in a violent way.
Right. No, absolutely. And so going to a lot too, you get to see and recognize people. It's the same promoters, the same security, the same stuff at all the shows. So you start to look familiar to people too.
That's so cool. So how many shows have you ever done, like a Hip leg? And I don't mean like 15 shows, but like two or three in a row or four or five in a row.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've done two or three in a row, especially when they'll do two or three nights in one place. They did a four-night stand at Art Park once, which was amazing. It was four nights in a row. But I've done a couple of cities.
Where's that, Lewiston?
Yeah, it's Lewiston, right across from Niagara on the Lake.
Yeah,
so, and I've done a couple cities back-to-back-to-back, you know, here and there. But... yeah, it's great. And as the internet kind of came up and got more popular, you know, as the band kind of did too, seeing the forums, like people would say, hey, there's a set list from last night. So you try to predict what you were going to get or see where you were at. Hip Bass was big there. And there's a couple other ones I don't remember.
Yeah, I've got the Hip Bass book. They actually published a book.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, it was like $50 or something like that. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to support this guy because...
Yeah.
What a great tool, Hip Bass, you know.
I'm writing that down. I'm checking that out. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to me about, I mean, you got into them from a live perspective. Where did you start record-wise? Because you started a little late, right?
Like, I was late.
Just because you're I mean, you're a certain age as well. Like, you know,
yeah, so it was right when
I was coming of age in the 90s.
Yeah. And I was coming of age right around 2000. So I graduated in 2002. So it was right around there. Like Music at Work was coming out. That tour in 2000 is, you know, it was three shows. And I think they had Kate Fenner was there. They had an organist come to a couple shows. It was a great tour, but it still had a good back catalog to jump into. So I got to experience all those record releases after that and be kind of around for, you know, some of the leaks before, some of the discussions after, and it just made for a really rich experience. For me, it was really anchored in the shows. You didn't go a summer without going to see a hip show. It was just part of what you did. There was always a show on the horizon. It was, oh, in 2 months I'm going to this one, in 3 months I'll be here. You know, next year I got four in a row. Like, you just kind of, you built your calendar around it for me and just a group of my friends. Yeah. And, you know, some of the biggest regrets are shows I didn't go to. You know, I've been to easily 40 plus. I haven't really sat down and figured it all out, but it shows that you missed. You're like, man, I should have went, but I had to work that day and I just didn't go.
That's
to
how I feel about Kingston. I feel that way about Kingston. I don't know why. Even if I couldn't have afforded the ticket scratch wise,
it
would have been in Market Square, you know, with my people, right?
Yeah. And it's hard because I wish if I could go back in time, you know, during that time, we weren't sure if it was the last tour. Everybody speculated, but there was no definitive. You know, it was how it depends how Gord does. And especially as the tour was going, it was going well. There wasn't any catastrophes. So the thought was, hey, maybe another one, maybe a couple feeders, like nothing so big, or maybe a small U.S. leg for that. But it just never came to be. So I think having such plenty, we took it for granted, and being able to go to a festival and they'd play a short set. We just took the hit for granted, I think, for a long time. And it's sad looking back because I wish I had more. And I have more than a lot of people, but I wish I had more.
Oh, that's heartbreaking when you say it like that.
Yeah.
I wish I had more. Yeah, because I've been to, I don't know, anywhere between 15 and 20 shows. I don't know exactly either. At one point I pulled all the set lists from the shows that I remembered and created a little spreadsheet, but I feel like it's incomplete somehow. And my memory is Swiss cheese. So, you know, there's no, but I hear you on the stuff that I didn't do, because for me, the latter half is stuff I didn't do. And going back and looking at it now and analyzing it in the way I have through these podcasts and listening the fuck out of it. It's a great catalog. The back half is strong.
There were some great tours there too. They did in the middle of the set for a whole year, three acoustic songs, and they would just pick songs out of their catalog. And so they did, it wasn't the same three songs every night, but they'd hit an acoustic set. There was a year they just did a cover song every night. That's a couple shows in New York City. It's so like just the experience of that. And it was
New York City.
Beacon Theater, I think it was. Yeah. So it was a couple nights. It wasn't packed, wasn't sold out. Just you could wander up to the front of the stage. You wanted a beer, you'd go get one, and you'd wander back. It was amazing.
But they did two nights, and it wasn't sold out.
No, it was insane. And I think like some of the best memories, like there's always the huge festivals, you know, going to Bellevue, going up to Molson Park and Barrie. But like going to Austin and seeing them at a small club in Austin, you know, going to Washington, D.C. or seeing them in New York City. Those are some of my best memories.
Did you see them at the 9:30 club?
Yes. Yes. Just once. And I wish I went more.
Oh.
I was actually talking to Sarah a little bit and I sent her a video and I came across a show I had completely forgotten. Jackson Triggs Winery in Niagara on the Lake. Small, intimate amphitheater years and years ago, and sat front row. It was an amazing show. And all of us just watching, I saw myself in the video. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I was there. That was amazing. Some of those are things, the memories just flooding back, listening to your podcast are kind of bringing up all those things that I'd forgotten.
Yeah. Well, I notice over your left shoulder, I notice you've got some paraphernalia. I don't know if you want to tell us anything about any of that stuff back there. Nobody can see it, of course, but
I got some cool stuff. I love a lot of it. A lot of it are tied to very specific memories. I have a hanky from Gord Downie, and he would always play hacky sack with a hanky. He would cover his face and mimic things. He would, you know, pretend to be riding a motorcycle and use it to wipe his brow. And it was a big set piece that he used on stage, and he would throw them out and give them to people that he noticed interacting a lot. I had a couple of those. I had one on my dog named, who I named Gord for years. He wore it around, but I have one he personally handed me. I have a tour book, which is super cool. It's something that you can't really get. It's not something you can buy. It's something given to the staff on tour. And it has all the information they need, you know, bus stops, times, departures, airports, hotels. And it has a list of all the venues, start times, end times, security companies. So it's just, I had a couple of those I've got from some people I've just come to know over the years. And they're kind of one of my treasured memorabilia things because you can't
get that.
Yeah.
You can't. I've never seen that. Yeah.
My prized possessions, the mic stand. Gord gave me a mic stand himself. It was one of the New York City shows, and just playing on stage, he would fight with the mic. It was another character on stage was the mic stand. He'd always have conversations with the microphone stand.
He's a man.
Yeah. Talk about him. He'd fight him. He'd kick him over and knock him back up. And he ripped apart the mic one night and handed me the bass to it. I'm sure he wasn't supposed to. I'm sure that was a problem at some point, but I took that home and that's never leaving.
Absolutely.
Me,
so.
There's a couple things like that I just, you know, I keep it at home.
I bet. God damn.
So right now, I mean, we talked a lot about live stuff. I want to know more about your experiences with the records because you have a perspective that I just don't have. I have a perspective of going out and buying a record on launch night. You know, for Fully, for Day for Night, and for Trouble at the Hen House, maybe Fan of Power too. But after In Violet Light, I fall off. And I missed Music at Work coming out. Or pardon me, I missed World Container and We Are the Same and Now for Plan A. And In Between Evolution, which right now is my favorite record. It's my favorite right now. It'll change, but that's the record that I go to. So I'm curious about your experiences with the records. And if there's one that you find yourself going to more often than not, is it Live Between Us because you like the live music so much? I don't know.
Yeah. I remember these record releases. There's one or two that really stand out, but the anticipation of them, I think, was the biggest thing then. It was the album's coming out, the album's next month, chatting about it online. Every once in a while, there'd be a leak, or a lot of times they would road test these songs in live shows. So being able to see some of the songs before you knew what they were, before you knew how they would come out on a record, listening to a song and recognizing it from a rant is just amazing. Being like, I remember this from a couple years ago. And now going back and hearing some of it, listening to some live shows again, that's probably the coolest part about it. Some of the songs that you'd hear on a record and be like, yeah, all right, that was cool. And then see it live and have it melt your face. Like it puts it in your heart a different way. And then some of the songs you love on their album and you'd see them live and they just never really hit. Fire in the Hole. They just never hit that song live. They would try and try, but it just never clicked the right way when they were playing
and
live.
It's electric on the record.
Oh, yeah. But it's just they can never hit it right, the timing right, or the execution right. For whatever reason, it seemed like an Achilles heel for them. And not to talk bad about them. They're not professionals. But that's one that just never really clicked over. My favorite release, and honestly, my go-to record right now, is We Are the Same.
Okay.
And that album probably doesn't have my favorite songs, but as an album overall, there's nothing on there I won't listen to. Nothing I want to skip. The mood of it is kind of summery and sweaty. You know, the album covers a campfire at night. But the release for that was very limited, and they did a live production streamed to movie theaters across Canada.
Yes.
And it was maybe 20 or 30 theaters. I haven't been able to find the whole thing online to watch in years. But you went, you had your ticket, you go, they give you the album, they gave you, you know, a little popcorn or whatever, and you go and you'd sit like it was an actual movie, but it was live broadcast from the bathhouse. I think it was kind of a pet project of Billy Ray, and they just like almost one-shotted from the camera from room to room, and they would play a song playing pool. They'd play a song up in the attic above the garage. They played a song in the recording studio, played a song in front of the Phantom Power, you know, thing from the art for In Between Evolution. It was just a really cool way to see the bathhouse and see them interact in it and see that album, because that's the first time you got to hear a lot of those songs was them playing them there. So
I gotta find it.
I know. I sent you a clip, but I could only find the clip of like the end credits. It was crazy. I gotta find that too.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you have access to it, whether you're Darren from the Hip Archive or anybody else who has a video, or even I would settle for an audio file of the bathhouse premiere, send us an email, tthtop40@gmail.com. That would be really great. Well, Andrew, do you think it's time we shift gears a little bit and start talking about the song of the week?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it.
All right. Well, we'll be right back after this.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, more terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Hey, it's JD here, and let's take a quick pause. Just enough time for me to tip my hat to our pals at North Star Bets. They make this whole thing possible, folks. You know how the Hip could make any room feel like home? Well, that's the vibe here, because North Star Bets is proudly Canadian. And check this out. They've got over 2,000 casino games, from top slots to live tables, that make you feel like you're calling the shots in Vegas without ever leaving Sudbury. And you want big money? Well, we're talking million-dollar progressive jackpots, Holmes. And if sports is your thing, their world-class sportsbook has you covered. Plus, and this is rare, they actually value their clients. Seriously, if you're going to throw down, do it with a crew that feels like home. North Star Bets. That's a win. Must be 19 plus and in Ontario. North Star Bets is licensed by iGaming Ontario. Please gamble responsibly.
Hey, this is Paul Langlois from the Tragically Hip saying hello. Now on with the countdown.
13, it's bad luck.
Measures for engineer. Lover, she simply slammed the door. She said, "You're gonna miss me. Wait and you'll see." Same of my father. Either it'll move me, or it'll move right through me, fully and completely. We'll be right back.
The riddle moves me, or it moves right through me. The title track from the Hip's third long play, Andrew from Florida. What did you think the first time you heard Fully, Completely?
I think the first time, I probably heard it on the radio. I probably heard it here and there, but hearing it live, it was one of the, they had four or five songs that were always in that would like just melt you. And it was a party song. So it just rocked hard. I don't know what else to say besides it just rocked hard. Hearing it live is such a different experience than on the album, like we talked about. It was one of those, like, you know, the crowd's going to be swerving, you know, jumping and moving and spinning around and getting sweaty. And it was usually something that they had something slow come right before it to kind of get you calmed down. And as soon as that bass comes in, everybody starts bouncing. It just makes you move. Even listening to it in preparation for the episode, listening to a couple live versions of it, I just found myself bouncing, getting the anticipation. It always starts slow. Gord always starts out singing the song, you know, and by the time he gets to the end, it's the same lyrics, you know, on the chorus, but he's screaming up. Like, the emotion changes. You can just feel like the visceral, like, sweat coming off of him as he's belting out the same lyrics that he was just singing sweetly in the very beginning.
It's only like 20 lines, right? Like,
oh yeah, it's super short. The lyrics are short, but, and it, going back, listening to it, the song can be 2.5 minutes live or 5 or 6. Like, it kind of morphed and changed on how the night was going. Different lengths and all different performances. So,
yeah. I mean, I know you said in the files you sent me, there's like a crazy version and then there's like a toned down version.
Yeah.
Like a more chill version. What's the more chill version like? I can't even imagine.
The more chill version, it more reminds me of the album. You know, okay. He's into it. They're not, their tempo's the same. It's just kind of the same throughout. You know, and it's more, it depends on how Gord took this song in the middle a lot and used it for rants, used it to explore, used it to, you know, throw some poetry in or throw some quotes in. And it was also a time when he would throw that dance in. You know, everybody sees those iconic Gord dance moves. This is one of those songs where they were very apparent. He'd have his fights with his microphone stand during this song. The microphone stand, it's a man. Just like, you know, it.
Yeah.
This is where that would come in. And then when he got into the second half, you could usually tell by the drums. The drums would start going. And if he started banging them hard, you knew you were in for a party. The people around you were getting crazy and the whole place just got electric. So like when I sent you a couple clips, that second clip, if you get into the second half of that song, you won't be able to sit still during it. It's different. That's, I kind of wanted that comparison. So I sent you a couple of examples and you can include them in the show notes, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. I think this is a song that's just got such a great build to it as well. Like it almost explodes at the end. It's so such a cacophony, you know, like it just builds and then like an oil gusher, you know.
Yeah, and it makes you anxious the beginning, and it's like, especially your first time, you get that feeling from it, but when you know what's coming or what can be coming, it's just, it has all that anticipation locked up in the beginning of it too. One of the songs it reminds me of a lot is Love is a First. And I had a whole half page of notes about how Love is a First kind of starts that way. And then I came across a live version where Love is a First is stuck right in the middle of Fully Completely as they were building it and putting it together. So that's the first clip I sent you. And it was just so funny to me because I'm like, these two songs really remind me of each other. And there it is. It's an experimentation in the middle of Fully Completely before Love is a First came out. So I sent that to you.
That's so cool, yeah. Andrew.
And I was like, well, there's a half page of notes kind of ruined because it's just what it was.
Well, I'll put that in the show notes for sure. That's fucking great. You'll have to remind me.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I have
such a terrible memory. It's good, you know, it's good in the short term, but I get more than 3 hours away from something and I forget. Do you have a stab at what this one's about? I mean, it's very sparse lyrically, like we've mentioned, but there's there's something to it. There's something deep in this song, I feel.
Yeah, it feels almost like there's some kind of building anger to it, where it's like not anger as much as it feels relationshipy a little bit. Like, you know, there's the line, right? Like I suggested a way to leave, and she's like, "You're gonna miss me. You'll see." Instead of having that conversation, it feels almost like one half of an argument. You know, like, I gave you everything fully, completely, and I'm trying, I'm doing this, and you're shutting me down. The same kind of where he's like, pondered the endlessness of the stars, and then like,
yes,
talking about I didn't really consider my father. So I'm thinking about all these big, huge things, but I'm ignoring the things right next to me. It's kind of what I got from it.
Well,
but I'm not sure. Like with everything Gore does, like, some of it seems like nonsense. Some of it seems beautiful. Some of it seems like just outside of your understanding. And some of it seems like you know what it is, but you're probably wrong. It kind of is different for everybody. And that's one of the things I love about it. You know, you'll sit there and belt the lyrics and then be like, what am I talking about? But it still feels right. It still feels like, just feels beautiful with the song. And
it does.
There's definitely like emotion with it. Yeah. But there's emotion to it. So that's something, Gord's got something with this song, and the emotion that he pulls from it every time he performs it is palpable. So there's something to it for him.
And I think the exercise of trying to figure out what a song is about needs to be defined as what I think it's about. Like, because the idea of whittling down, like, I've read poetry and it's obtuse. You know, like, yes, like, I have a theme for every poem I write, and like, I sort of know what it's about. Like, I sort of know what a couple lines mean, and some of it is just word salad, and some of it is very meaningful, and some of it's just cool visuals. But nobody's ever going to read my poem and figure out what it is I'm trying to say. So we probably need to stop doing that Gord too, right? Because he is like, I didn't even mean to compare myself to him as a poet, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just trying to find those hints to get a little bit of a connection. And sometimes I think we build those connections on falsities that we've make up, but it doesn't make it any less valuable. Like, it means something that important to whoever pulls it, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, you got a burner of a song. This is a great song. And I'm really pleased that it's on the countdown. So that's what I've got for you this week. Andrew, I want to know if there's anything that you would like to plug.
I have nothing. I work. I have kids. I don't do the media thing. This is all new to me. So
well, you're doing great.
Yeah. I'd like to plug your podcast, buy you a coffee, get in on the jams, and join in on what's going on. It's worth doing.
I really appreciate that. It's a fun community, I think, that we're starting to build here. I wish I had started it a couple of years ago, because it could be, a bigger thing. But I, you know, the countdown's sort of grabbing people again, I think, for, you know, hip fans. This is a little bit more direct, a note to hip fans than getting hip to the hip and discovering down anywhere, you know?
Yeah. And like, for myself, I kind of not fell off of my fandom as much, but I wasn't as active with a lot of I see a lot of the cover bands with the guys mimicking them, and like, it's great, good for you, but it's not really my jam. You know, and the reissues and stuff are great, but I kind of, after that last show in Kingston, I kind of didn't close the door on them. They're still a huge part of my life. I listen to them all the time, but I haven't been actively, you know, seeking everything out and watching stuff 24/7 and being super.
You have watched the documentary though, right? The docuseries?
I watched the second half of it. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch the last Kingston show in its entirety. I rewatched the end to validate a couple of things in my head, but that I remember from it. But in general, like, some of that stuff's just hard to watch, because I miss it. Like, it's weird that it's that emotional, but I miss it.
You're in the thick of things.
Yeah, right until that end. So
the fact that you saw 40 shows in the back half, you know, that's impressive. It's very impressive.
Wish I was there for the first half.
For flying the flag.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's what I got. Thanks for stopping by. Pick up your shit.
Thanks for listening to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. To email us, send an email to tthtop40@gmail.com. We're social. Find us on all the socials at tthtop40.
Tuvra! Podcasts and such.